Oh well. She's growing up. Next thing you know, she's going to be married.
Don't say that.
She's going to be looking for other videos online. And then.
What's DP mean?
Oh, Daddy, I watched this video, Two Girls, One Cup.
Dance, monkey, dance.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Dance Monkey Dance. I'm Chris.
I'm John.
How you doing, John?
Fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Did you have a good week?
Yeah, it was fine.
Yeah?
Yep.
I had an interesting thing happen this week.
Uh-oh.
I took a half day on Thursday because the kid had to go to the doctor, and we come home from the doctor and I go out to get the mail and I'm like, what? There's a bunch of bees outside. Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, more than normal for the spring. And as I go in the house, I look out the screen door and it looks like, you know, like when you see a swarm of gnats from a distance.
Sure.
Like it's
like just a little cloud or whatever.
Yeah. So I'm seeing that, but it's closer to the house. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? And I kind of look past the cloud to the palm tree that is in the property line between our house and our neighbor's house. And there on one of the palm leaves is a swarm of bees.
Okay.
Like thousands that have been perched onto this palm frond. And then I don't know if it's the bees that are protecting them or whatever, but there's a swarm around them. So I have people in my house that are allergic to bees. I know that the dude next door is allergic to bees. So I call my pest guy and I said, and I took a video and I sent it to him and I said, hey, look at this video and let me know if there's anything we can do, because honeybees are an endangered species now. You can't just kill them all.
But are they honeybees or are they sweat bees or are they yellow jackets?
Well, they're not yellow jackets. As close as I can get, you can kind of see them starting to make honeycombs on the palm frond. Yeah.
That's so interesting.
So he calls me back and he goes, yeah, man, there's nothing that I can do personally. They're endangered. If somebody finds out that I killed a hive of bees, I go to jail. I said, I wasn't expecting you to come over with like a fucking flamethrower.
Right.
But, you know, what do we do? And he goes, well, we can call beekeepers. Beekeepers will come. They'll get them. They'll home them in a new area with a hive. And like, you save the planet a little bit that way and blah, blah, blah. So I was like, call people. Like, I don't care what it takes. I got people that are allergic here. Like, help me out. And he was like, yeah, I'll call them right now. So I call the neighbor and I say, hey, just so you know, and I sent her the video and she goes, oh, my husband's deathly allergic. Thank you for telling me. And I was like, well, they're supposed to come out and get them sometime today. And she goes, well, my best friend's father is a beekeeper. So I'll just call him, tell your guy not to worry about it. So I said, okay, fine. Thinking that she was going to get rid of them that night.
Right.
Friday rolls around in the morning and they're still there. So I'm like, what the fuck? So I sent her another text and said, you know, my wife is a little antsy because she feels like she's trapped in the house. She doesn't want to go out because she's allergic. And if she gets stung, it's going to be really bad, blah, blah, blah. So she goes, okay, I'll call them and get them there like within the next hour. And somehow they were able to transplant the entire colony in like 10 minutes. They showed up with, I guess, in their bee suits and like sprayed it with smoke and then just kind of carved the entire thing off of the palm frond, because the palm frond is still there and you can see like remnants of the honeycomb.
Little bees holding on.
Well, there were a bunch of bees that I guess were left behind that
okay.
I guess just die off because they don't have a colony. I don't know how that works. So yeah, that was an interesting 24 hours of like hoping that they don't find their way to like my house. You know, oh, look, come over here. Let's build a hive in the chimney.
Yeah.
Because that would have sucked.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if I can answer the question. Separated from hive. Let's see. So if they get separated from the hive, if it's under 3 miles, they can find their way back.
Oh.
If it's over 7 miles, there's no hope.
Okay.
So I guess they just find a place to go and die.
Oh.
But the majority of the colony lived.
Okay.
So there's something to be said for that, I guess.
I guess. Did you see them when they took it away?
No, I didn't.
No.
I happened to be at work. I was kind of hoping that I would be there.
Did they come up with like a big scoop and just drop it into a box or something?
I was kind of curious of how they did it. But it's something like that. They kind of scrape them off. They spray them with that smoke stuff so that they like go to sleep or something.
They're docile.
Docile. And then they bring the box with the beehive things in it and just kind of scrape them down into it and make sure that the queen is in there.
Hmm.
So, and I would go out there and I'd be looking because it's an interesting experience because it's just like this big biomass that kind of moves on the tree. And anytime I'd get too close, these big bees would like come and buzz my head.
Oh,
and then I'd back away and everything would be fine. And if I got too close, they'd come buzz my head again. It's like, oh, okay. I'm not even going to go over there now. So it was kind of interesting. And that was my excitement for the week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you get any honey out of it?
No.
No?
No. That I don't think that they were there long enough.
Oh. Well, then maybe the guy who took them should bring you by some honey. Say, maybe. Hey, this is what came out of the ashes of those bees you gave me. Yum, yum. Bee poop.
And then I say, no thanks. It's okay. You can keep it. We also went to go see the movie Shazam this weekend.
And what did you think?
I liked it. My problem was I think the theater that it was in, the projector was not bright enough.
Oh.
There were several parts where they're in, I forget what they call it in the movie, the internal rock or whatever the place that Shazam, like their lair is.
Uh-huh.
Anytime that they were there, and it was several times in the movie, you couldn't really see what was going on. And I felt like maybe it was just too dark on the projector, like maybe the bulb's going out or something. But everything that was in bright daylight and stuff, I enjoyed the movie overall. The thing that I really liked about it was everything that's in the trailer happens within the first like third of the film. So there's two thirds of the film that you have no idea and like you don't get any of the direction from in the trailers, which is how I feel like trailers should be.
Sure.
You shouldn't give away big plot points. You shouldn't give away like funny dialogue points because you want that to play in the theater. So I thought they did a really good job of marketing it into something where I wasn't expecting what was coming in like two thirds of it. So I like that. I think Zachary Levi was born to play this role.
Really?
Yeah. When you look at like Chuck and you look at, he didn't really have a huge part in Thor, but
no,
the stuff that you've seen him in, he's been kind of slapsticky, like over the top. And this is very much that. This is, he's playing a 15-year-old kid in an adult body.
Right.
And it works. It very much works. His interactions with the kids and, you know, what you see in the trailers and stuff is, that goes out throughout the entire thing. And he does a really, really good job with it. I'm interested to see where a sequel would go.
Okay.
I don't want to give anything away because I don't know if you're going to see it. So
I will see it at some point.
Redbox movie?
Yeah. Or when it goes to the dollar theater and less people will go.
Oh, well, there you go.
You know.
It's a good movie, though. It's... In the pantheon of DC films,
mm-hmm.
I think I like it more than Wonder Woman, but less than Aquaman.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I have heard it is one of the better DC movies.
Yeah, I think there's something about Aquaman. I think there's more action in Aquaman. I think you can cut about 20 minutes out of Aquaman and make it an even better film.
Okay.
Where this came in at about 2 hours. I guess it's a smaller scale film than Aquaman. Like Aquaman has these huge world saving, you know, tropes in it, just like a lot of other superhero films. Where this is a very small story. It's very much like Deadpool. It's one little chunk. It's not about saving the world. It doesn't really break the fourth wall, but there is a bunch of stuff in it that's a little meta. So it references other superheroes.
Okay.
And it's really weird because Shazam shows up and they're like, oh, now we have a superhero. And you kind of forget that it's a connected universe, almost. Like, it's happening in the same thing as Superman and Batman.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's very nitpicky, but I do think it's a good film. I think at this point, Aquaman is better, though.
Okay.
After thinking about it for a day.
Okay.
So, I would suggest it. I mean, did you ever see Aquaman?
I did not.
No. Okay.
No, I don't go to movies.
I know.
Because there are people there.
I know. But Aquaman is now out on.
Yes, it is out on DVD.
Stuff, so.
Yes.
I didn't know if you had picked it up or.
Not yet. Okay. Nope.
But you do make exceptions on that rule about going to the movies.
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes. But
Are you going to go see Endgame in the theater?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't buy your ticket yet?
No.
I did.
Nerd.
I bought it when they went on sale. I wasn't going to go to like the Thursday night show and taking the family. We usually go on the weekend. So as soon as they said that the tickets were available, I hopped on for Saturday morning,
mm-hmm.
found a decent set of seats because it's all reserved now. So you can pick your seats and, all happy. Was the first person to buy tickets in the theater. I was like, yeah, okay, cool. And 10 minutes later I get an email from, my kid's chorus teacher.
Okay.
Who says, so the tickets were August 27th at 10 AM. And the email says, thank you so much for volunteering to help in our car wash on April 27th at 10 a.m.
Oh.
And I was like, motherfucker. It's like,
well,
that's.
I guess you're not going to go to the car wash.
So I immediately, I was like, well, shit, what am I going to do? So I don't know if it was the only place to buy tickets, but when tickets went on sale, they were driving everybody to Fandango.
Okay.
And that's where I originally bought the tickets from. So I'm looking in the Fandango app and you can look at your tickets for the day, and at the bottom, there's a little button that's kind of hard to find that says, can't make the show with a question mark.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, well, let me hit that and see what that does. And it says, within so many hours of the showing, you can give your tickets back without any repercussions.
Really?
And if you want your money back, they will not refund the convenience fee.
Okay.
But if you want Fandango credit, they'll do the convenience fee with that. And then okay. It just sits in your account. So I was like, okay, so I do that and I go to Sunday and I go to 10 o'clock, find the same seats. They're open. Cool. Okay. Push the button. Credit's all there. So now we're going on Sunday.
Okay.
But it was just one of those things. It was like, motherfucker.
But now you're going to hear all these spoilers before you go.
No, I can hold out.
You can block that out. Okay.
As long as I don't go on the internet for a couple days or don't go to the comic book sites and the movie sites that I usually go to, everything will be fine.
Right. All right.
So yes, I'm a big nerd. We already have our tickets. I can't help it.
Well, good. Enjoy yourself.
Oh, absolutely. That's what movies are all about.
Enjoying yourself?
Yes.
Yes.
They're escapism.
Yes, they are.
Having a bad day at work, go to a movie where like half the population gets wiped out. You know, good times. Did you see the new trailer that came out this week?
For the Joker?
For the Joker?
I don't understand it.
So this is a character that I feel has always worked well when you don't know his backstory. He's not somebody that you should understand, like his motivations and where he came from, right?
See, I think that's the whole problem with some of these movies, is that they think they have to reinvent that.
I guess. It's what I'm really hoping is that the movie is not the journey to become the Joker. That it happens within the first half of the film and the second half is him raising hell. Because if the last thing is him dyeing his hair green and walking down the hall in one of those shots, I guess the last shot is him in an elevator and the door closes. Mm. If that's the very last shot of the film and he's going out to wreak havoc on Gotham, but you don't get to see it, I'm going to be mad.
I don't know. I just don't feel any need for that movie to exist.
No. And apparently, from what I've read, Joaquin Phoenix was originally supposed to be Doctor Strange. He pretty much had the part with Marvel. Marvel had gone to him and said, we think you would make a great Doctor Strange. And he didn't do it because he didn't want the multi-picture deal.
Okay.
Which makes me scratch my head because you're an actor and you want to work.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So apparently he's a huge comic book fan. And at some point DC approached him and said, you know, we're trying to do these comic book movies. Is there anything that you've ever wanted to do? And he said, yeah, but you're not going to let me. And they said, well, try us. And he said, I always wanted to do a movie about the Joker. And they had just signed Jared Leto to be the Joker in Suicide Squad. And right. So right about that time is when DC like had that fracture of where they were like, well, we can have two different Supermen and give us your pitch for what the Joker movie would be. And he basically said, well, it would be a character study. It would be like what makes this guy tick. It would be what happened to him to drive him that crazy. And for some reason they said, yeah, sounds good. Let's do it. And I know that there's a little bit of the Joker's backstory in The Killing Joke, I guess it is. But the failed comedian aspect of like the Joker persona. But I just don't feel, without Batman in the film to fight the Joker, I just don't see how it becomes a good film.
Right.
And I've heard a bunch of stories of like them rewriting huge chunks of the script on the day. So that never bodes well for a script either. But apparently the original script was good enough to get, what's his name?
De Niro?
Yes, Robert De Niro into the film.
Yeah, that's another thing I see as weird.
He's playing like a Johnny Carson type person, I think.
Yeah, like Rupert Pupkin?
Who?
The King of Comedy.
Okay. Never heard that name before.
It was a De Niro movie.
It was what?
It was a De Niro movie. The King of Comedy.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Also starred Jerry Lewis and Sandra Bernhard.
I know like 4 De Niro movies, and 2 of them are gangster films. And then there's the one where he's with Ben Stiller talking about milking cats or something.
Yes.
Whatever the fuck that one was.
Yes. Meet the Parents.
Yes. I will publicly admit on here, and I'll probably get crucified for it, I've never seen Raging Bull, and I've never seen Taxi Cab Driver.
Neither have I. It's called Taxi Driver.
Or Taxi Driver, sorry. Whatever. I know people are going to be like, what? I just never really got around to it.
Wow.
Although I've seen a ton of stupid sci-fi films that I should probably not have watched, and watched Raging Bull and Taxi Driver. I'm going to call it Taxi Cab Driver. Just because.
Okay, if you must.
Let's see. He's playing Murray Franklin. And the Joker. Or just Joker. So apparently so in the trailer, there's a little kid that he's like making smile.
Mm-hmm.
That supposedly is young Bruce Wayne.
Oh.
And the guy that's on the TV talking about the cowardice of hiding behind a mask is Thomas Wayne.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there's like a weird,
interesting,
like they're going to try to, I guess, set it way before the events of, like, anything that we know of is of modern Gotham.
But, yeah. So, Thomas Wayne met the Joker before he was killed by him. Depending on which story you go after.
Right. So there was this weird conspiracy theory online this week after the Joker came out that the Joker's real name in this is Arthur Fleck.
Okay.
So if you take his first initial and Fleck, it's Affleck. That there was this weird thing of like DC calling out Affleck for not wanting to be in the movies anymore or something.
Yeah.
Like, just way off the deep end of, like, stupidity for this.
Right.
I do think it's funny that it spells out Affleck.
I don't think that's real. Do you?
No. Not at all. I think people are reading into it because they're mad that Affleck's leaving.
Because he was going to be such an awesome Batman.
I mean, he's okay. I think what happened to poor old Ben was he was so picked on for Daredevil that when
the movie sucked.
Yes, it did. But when he took Batman, he was like, look, I promise it's not going to be a Daredevil thing. And we got Batman v Superman, which arguably is not
another
very
movie
great
that did not need to be made.
No. And then you get Justice League, and he's doing the best he can in Justice League. But when you get picked on for superhero movies as much as he has, at some point, something's got to give. And he was just like, look, I'm not doing this anymore. Fuck you guys. But I do think it would be awesome if what they're not telling us is this movie starts out in the future. And it's Batman finally defeating the Joker for the last time, and the Joker's talking about why he is the way he is or something.
Okay.
Like, I think that would be cool. And Batman is actually Affleck. Like, that, I think that would be fucking cool. Just to kind of round out that whole thing. I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, can you see like there's a scenario where the Joker's dying or something at the hands of Batman for whatever reason. And he's like, you don't remember that we met once. And he tells, like, there's a little vignette of him putting his hands in the kid's mouth and making him smile or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just thought it would be kind of cool.
Maybe.
There's nothing on IMDb about the possibility of Batman, so, you know.
But maybe that's the big surprise.
Could be.
Maybe they've actually been really good.
I mean, they did spoil his appearance in Suicide Squad. Yeah, who knows? Maybe they're learning. Did you know that Robert De Niro had his own makeup artist for Joker?
I would believe that. He is De Niro.
Do you think that's something that they offer, or does he say, hey, I need my own makeup artist?
Oh, I'm sure that's part of something that's negotiated.
Apparently, she has been his makeup artist since... Oh, it keeps going. Meet the Parents? She was Ben Stiller's makeup artist on Meet the Parents, and then all of a sudden she jumps to De Niro.
Hmm. Well, I could see why.
Yeah.
I mean, what career does Stiller have now? Didn't he have to do the sequel to Don't Mess with the Zohan, or whichever one it was he did? What was the movie where he's a supermodel?
Zoolander?
Zoolander, that's it. Whatever.
So since then, any time that De Niro has made a movie, she's been his makeup artist.
Okay.
I mean, I guess that's good work if you can get it, right?
Yeah.
So in a scenario like that, like, you're brought on specifically to be the makeup artist for Robert De Niro.
Mm-hmm.
Are you hired by the production company, or does De Niro pay her himself?
I would think that it is part of his fee.
So here's a huge chunk of money. This includes money for your makeup artist.
Yes.
Okay.
Because she is in the employ of Robert De Niro.
Okay.
So I would think that it's, yeah, that he pays her, and that's part of whatever, deal he makes, or his agent makes.
So if they're like, hey, he's getting $20 million for this picture, just say.
She's getting 10,000.
Well, yeah, but that 10,000 is within that 20 million.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because that $20 million is also going to go to pay his publicist, his manager.
Yes.
All that other shit.
Yes.
If he's got an assistant on the movie, which I don't see any.
I'm sure he would.
Yeah, I'm sure there's somebody who's got to knock on his trailer door and be like, hey, Bobby, come on, they need you on set.
Yeah.
And then they put the earpiece in his ear so that they can just feed him lines.
Yes.
I hear that's how Bruce Willis works now.
Oh, okay.
He doesn't learn lines. He's got a person reading into his ear, and then he just spits it back out.
Okay. Sure, why not?
What's his name? The actor, Godfather.
Marlon Brando?
Marlon Brando. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I listened to the audiobook from Ron Perlman. And Ron Perlman tells a story about when he was in Island of Dr. Moreau with Marlon Brando.
Okay.
And he was really excited because Brando was one of his idols, and he thought it'd be really interesting to ask him about some of the experiences he had on set, you know, as a, I guess as a fan or whatever, but like on a mutual actor basis. And he talks about how like Brando wouldn't talk to anybody on set, refused to like acknowledge other people that were like in the room, and how I don't, have you ever seen that movie?
What? The Godfather?
No, Island of Dr. Moreau.
No.
So in Island,
because he's got the weird little thing that follows him around.
Yeah, that little guy.
Yeah.
So there's a
Mini Moreau.
Yes, there you go. There's a scene in which one of the creation cat people things attack another one, and they have this big outdoor like court part of the film. And Ron Perlman plays this character that's blind, and he's like the sayer of the law. And he talks about in the book how he's there for like 5 days standing in the same place, and he's got in these contacts in his eyes, and he's like truly blind. And he can't see anything. He's standing there, and every time that they get Brando from his trailer, he can hear Brando under his voice saying, "Won't this fucking guy move? Like, doesn't he know who I am?" And on the end of the fifth day, it suddenly dawned on Brando that he was playing it blind and that he had contacts in his eyes.
Uh-huh.
So he walks up to him, and for the first time he talks to Ron Perlman, and he's like, "Holy shit, you're doing it blind?" And he was like, "Well, yeah, it's like the blind thing of justice, and you didn't think that I was in your way for 5 days, did you?" And he went to the, Brando went to the director and said, "Look, we got to do this all over. 'Cause if I knew he was doing it blind, I would have played it a completely different way." And apparently he is also one of those guys that was wearing an earpiece and would just be fed his lines.
Well, I could see that, because he was batshit crazy.
Yeah, I guess at some point as an actor, you reach a point where you can pretty much just play yourself and you don't need to learn lines anymore.
Yeah.
Like they work around you because I guess you're a commodity.
You're just paid to show up. You're a piece of meat.
Yeah. You're the selling point for the film, so who the fuck cares?
Yep. That's it.
It must be nice.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's good work if you can get it. I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah.
Being paid a couple $1 million.
Yep.
And I guess the other thing that I read about Bruce Willis is that no matter how big the role, he gets $1 million a day. So if you want him to show up for four lines, you're paying him $1 million.
Yeah, but that $1 million is going to go far if he's really good. It's going to go far if he totally sucks. It's going to go far if he badmouths your movie. So, I mean, I think it's money well spent. I would think. No?
You know what? Let's get $1 million and we'll fly him in.
Eh.
And we'll act like we're shooting a film just to see how like fucking batshit crazy he is.
Cool.
Like,
let's do that. He could be in that superhero film we never made.
You put the earpiece in his ear, and then you're like, "All right, say, cats are sucking my cock right now."
You say, "Sybil Shepherd was better than you on Moonlighting."
Just see how far we can push him.
M. Night Shyamalan is a hack.
And then he'll be like, "I'm not saying this shit." And then he'll be like, "This guy wants me to say this." And we're like, "That's not what he said.
The Return of Bruno was the worst album in the history of life."
Wow. You're getting a...
I mean, what else what else would you tell him to piss him off?
Well, not like you tell him like shit that's not in the script to say. And then when he does it, then you're like, "No, that's not what we asked you to do. Here, we want you to do this." Just drive him a little crazy. But if not, it's fine. Whatever.
Eh, whatever.
They just announced a new Blu-ray for Ghostbusters.
I saw that. With deleted scenes that have never been seen before.
Six rare and newly unearthed deleted scenes.
Won't that be exciting?
Including the long-requested Fort Detmering scenes. I guess that's yes. Where Ray gets the blowjob from the ghost.
Yes.
Sure.
Hey, it's, you know, it's a money grab. All of it is today. Whatever.
I mean, this is why when, like, you get a new format, you wait, because all of a sudden they're just going to be like, hey, we've just found all this shit.
Right.
That we can put in there.
Oh, we can use this now.
Yeah. I'm sure, like, those deleted scenes have been sitting somewhere for 30 years or whatever it's been.
And they're probably garbage, right?
Yeah. I mean, unless they've truly remastered them.
Yeah.
I don't.
Because, I mean, that's like they found footage, like home video footage of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Okay.
And it's like, really? Who cares at this point? There's going to be nothing really revealing about it, right?
Yeah, I mean, they've been cut out for a reason. And it's not going to add anything to the film. They're going to look like crap. They're going to be all like dust riddled and scratched and shit like that. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, they're not going to be fully processed, fully edited.
No. So you get those, you get raw takes for the Central Park bum scene, which was one of those things that they cut out.
Right.
That they felt was stupid because you could tell it was Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
So you get that, which I guess is supposed to be a selling point. You get the 1984 Show West exhibitor reel featuring Ooh. Murray and Aykroyd pitching an early reel of footage to theatrical exhibitors. You get the full Ghostbusters TV commercial that's in the film. You get the
right.
You get the Ghostbuster TV commercials outtakes, the original press kit, the original domestic teaser trailer, the original stereo audio for the feature, and fan commentary. You know, on the original, I think it was the original release of the Ghostbusters DVD, there was a feature that was like Mystery Science Theater, where you saw, I think it was Aykroyd, Ramis, and Murray, like as silhouettes sitting in a theater, and they would talk about the film as it was going on, which was funny. And then for Ghostbusters 2, you get commentary featuring Ivan Reitman, Dan Aykroyd, and executive producer. The episode of the Oprah Winfrey Show, where the entire cast of Ghostbusters 2 was on in June of 1989. The full Ghostbusters 2 theatrical electronic kit. The rare unfinished teaser trailer featuring the full commercial from the film. And the original stereo audio. If you're going to remaster it onto a Blu-ray, I kind of want a 5.1 mix.
Yeah, I mean, why? Well, I mean, obviously, I'd say why, but it's like, obviously, cost.
Yeah.
You know, they know that this has a somewhat limited release, a somewhat limited audience.
Yeah.
But it is the first time in 4K, right? Is that the big selling point?
Yes, it's a new 4K Ultra HD and DVD release.
So, there you go.
The Blu-ray set hit shelves on June 11th. It doesn't say anything about the Ultra 4K.
Hmm.
But unless... So unless they're going to really redo it for the Ultra 4K with a new audio mix and stuff like that, I don't see why this would be worth it.
Yeah.
Are they going to clean up the matte lines and all the shit from like, the special effects?
No. Of course not. They should. They won't.
And you would think, so next year on June 11th, we're getting a brand new Ghostbusters film. So why wouldn't you wait another year to release this?
Well, maybe this is that in between female Ghostbusters and child Ghostbusters, that they just want to keep Ghostbusters in the news somehow.
Right. Right. I don't know. It's much like the Joker film. It seems like this is unnecessary.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. I'll probably still buy it, but I would agree.
Because you're a glutton for punishment?
Because the only reason to buy DVDs is to get the bonus material, right?
No, I mean, now if you buy something on Vudu, it comes with all the bonus stuff that's on the...
Does it?
Yeah, it just comes as extra features.
Oh, maybe I'll start doing that then.
I mean, I normally, if I'm going to buy a new film, that's the way I do it now.
Okay. And you feel the quality is worth it and... blah, blah, blah.
You see, I'm not one of those people that are stuck on quality as far as like...
Yes, I've heard that about you.
That's why I do this show. No.
Yes. Quantity.
Yes. So I'm just as happy watching a film on an old DVD as I am watching it on a Blu-ray.
Okay.
It's one of the things that drives me crazy is watching... something that I've seen for a long time on a regular DVD suddenly projected in HD.
Yep.
Because if you watch, and I'll give you the perfect example of this, episode 2, Attack of the Clones.
Uh-huh.
I had never seen it in HD before.
Okay.
And one day I was flipping channels, and it was on like TNT or TBS or one of those. So I was sitting there watching it. It was in HD. I'd never seen it before. And the effects looked so bad that it was ripping me out of the film.
Hmm.
And I was like, I would rather watch that on a crappy DVD and at least enjoy the story. And I don't like, I'm not a huge HD fan of like movie transfers or like, oh, you've got to see this on the Blu-ray. I don't really care. I just want to watch the movie, which is why like watching movies over the VPN and stuff is fine because it doesn't matter to me if it's in HD.
Mm-hmm.
So I know a lot of people out there will only watch things on Blu-ray and they won't do streaming through Netflix or Hulu or something like that because they're like, it just isn't the best quality. And I'm like, but you're getting to see the film. So it doesn't matter to me. I'm not getting anything better in my mind than I've already seen, especially for older films.
Yeah, that's true.
Because when you're watching a movie in the theater, you're not seeing it projected in HD. Even if it's a digital projector and they're like, oh, it's 4K, whatever. The throw from the projection booth to the screen loses quality.
Sure.
Just the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
So... I have seen, and I've seen things when they release it in like, well, here's the movie in 1080 60 and it looks like a soap opera.
Yep.
Like, I don't know if you've ever seen that effect. That drives me absolutely fucking crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, yeah.
Like it's almost too lifelike at that point. You lose the movie aspect.
Right.
Look to it. And I remember seeing that in like Best Buy or something, they were showing, I think, the original Avengers film in 1080 60. And the dude was like, doesn't that look good? I was like, that looks fucking terrible. That doesn't look, I don't want it to feel like the Avengers are standing in front of me. I just want to watch the film. And that takes me out of it. Because it's shot in 24, it's edited in 24. To get it to 60, you're like doubling frames.
Right.
So like you're not doing anything better by that. And then you get fucking Peter Jackson, who did the 48 frame thing. And it's like, that looks like shit too. No more gimmicks. Just fucking make the movie in 24. I don't know. I'm just old school that way. Rant over. Sorry.
You done? Okay.
Okay. Fine. Be that way.
I will.
Do you follow Mark Hamill on any of his like social media stuff?
Oh, once in a while. He pops up in my Twitter feed.
He did a... I guess somebody asked him a question on Twitter about somebody heard that he had helped Warwick Davis complete his Star Wars action figure collection when he met him on the set of Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
And Mark Hamill actually wrote back.
He said
when he met Warwick, he was 10 years old and he was shooting around the set on like roller skates or something. And Mark got into a discussion with him about if he had any of the action figures. And the way that Mark tells it was that he went up to Lucas and said, "You think you can get this cute kid that like you're going to make tons of movies with a couple of action figures for his collection?" And apparently Lucas called Hasbro or Kenner at the time, I guess. And to the set shows up an entire case filled with the action figures that they presented to him on set.
Oh.
And if Warwick was smart, he'd still have that. Never taking them out. Just putting the thing up on the wall. Much like all the other nerds. I wonder if Warwick ever stole anything from the Harry Potter set.
I don't know.
Next time you see him, you should ask him. We know that you rub shoulders with all those stars.
I did, but you know, I haven't stayed in touch.
That doesn't matter. Just write him out of the blue. He'll remember.
So I see the Twitter question. "Hey, Hamill, I heard you helped Warwick Davis complete his Star Wars action figure collection after you met him on the set of Return of the Jedi. True or false?"
And then there was... So I saw it on comicbook.com.
Okay, because the Twitter page doesn't show that he responded.
So I guess on Mark Hamill's Twitter...
Yeah.
He wrote, "When I met Warwick Davis, he was a 10-year-old boy whizzing around Elstree Studios on roller skates. He was also a huge Star Wars fan who only had a few action figures.
There it is.
All I did was ask George if we could fill out his collection."
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting that he didn't, that it doesn't show up as a reply to the original comment from Frisky Woods.
Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Whatever.
Maybe somebody like screenshotted it and sent it to him or something.
Oh, could be.
And then he just wrote the reply or whatever. If you go to Celebration next week in Chicago, you can hook up with Warwick.
Yeah. I mean, I know people who'll be seeing him. But not I.
No.
Nope, because you know. Nope, because I'm not going to spend money anymore to stand in lines to buy shit.
Oh, newsflash! Wait, go back. When did this happen?
After Celebration in Orlando last time.
Oh. Okay.
Good memory there.
I've never been to a Celebration, so.
Yeah, I told you it was horrible that they had all of the really cool scenic pieces that like the Belgians made, like the interior of the Death Star and stuff, were on stage for the Star Wars show to film with.
Oh.
Whereas previous years they were out on the floor and you could like queue up and get, you know, get your picture in the back to tank or get your picture at the Jarek board or, you know, and it was really cool. And I felt like, well, you just fucked over the fans for, you know, your shitty podcast.
Do you think it's become too big?
I think it has.
Yeah.
I think it has. I think if they had a Star Wars celebration in three locations in the U.S., it would be much more manageable.
Okay.
But the fact that the crowds are so ridiculous that you can't get into the panels and the lines for the celebrities are so long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless you're, you know, like random Jedi number four. so I just, I don't see the joy in it for me anymore. It is much easier for me to go on eBay and pay 10, 20 bucks more for something than it is to spend $400 to get it in person.
Right. And I think we talked about this last week. It's got to the point where the only thing that it buys you for standing in those lines is you get to see the new trailer 5 minutes earlier than everybody else.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that.
You know, and, you know, some of these celebrities are celebrities only because of the 9 movies they've done or the 6 movies or the 3 movies. And yet they think they're, you know, they're De Niro and Brando.
Right.
I'm sorry, Anthony Daniels. You're not. you are the epitome of the one trick pony.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only thing.
And yet it's $100 for his autograph, and it has to be on the photo he provides.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that.
Unless that's changed, but in the past, it has to be the photo he provides, which is him in the costume with the head off.
So I couldn't 3D print a C-3PO head and have him sign it?
I don't know. I don't know if he's relaxed his demands lately.
Okay. Ahmed Best is going to be there. You can go talk to him about being bullied.
I already have. I already talked to Ahmed Best.
About him almost committing suicide?
Well, no, duh.
Hayden Christensen's going to be there.
Yeah. So?
Alan Tudyk?
Yeah. What about it?
Okay. The chick that was Enfest Nest?
Ooh, well, that's the one I'd go for.
See, it's weird. Like, you click on these people, and there's no. There, like, it doesn't take you anywhere.
Oh.
Like, I was expecting to see, like, price lists and shit.
Hmm.
Guess it's too late to try to become a media guest, right?
I would say so, yes. And you'd still have to fly out to Chicago on Thursday.
Well, that's all right.
Okay.
We'll drive. Come pick me up.
No.
Oh.
No. I am not doing a road trip.
Oh. So you have to pre-book your autographs.
Yes.
For celebration.
Yes.
Hayden Christensen is $200.
Yeah. Not worth it.
Wow. Ahmed Best is 80. What about my boy Alan Tudyk?
He's probably up there. See, 70. I don't think that Ahmed Best is an $80 autograph.
No, and I feel like Alan Tudyk is worth 70 bucks because he's done a ton of shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Daniel Logan, Boba Fett in the prequels. $45 for an autograph. Nah.
See, I think that's more along the lines. You know, there. I mean, Harrison Ford, $1,500 now for an autograph. Fuck that.
The chick that was Enfys Nest, it's the only thing I've ever seen her in. Her autograph is 50 bucks.
Yeah.
See, some of this stuff, I don't understand why they're even there. Like Greg Proops, who...
Because he was one of the two-headed announcers at the podcast.
Yeah, and that he's $50.
Yeah.
Jason Isaacs. Okay, Jason Isaacs would be an interesting autograph. Sure. $80?
No. I think $80 is too much for a fucking signature.
Oh, John Ratzenberger's going to be there.
Yeah.
Oh, does that mean my autograph thing that you got me is no longer, like,
rare? The only one? I would say probably not.
Fuck.
I'm sure other people had that idea at some point.
But wasn't it that they weren't making a run of those, a lot of those action figures, though?
No, that was from a while ago.
Oh, okay.
Where you can find, well, I mean, I found them in the Acme toy store, so
You
can find them.
Damn.
But I can guarantee that yours was actually signed by him.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So, you know, if you need a proof, let me know.
You are the certificate of authenticity?
Yes. I am your letter of provenance.
So how do you feel about somebody like Peter Mayhew being $70 for an autograph, knowing that you know him personally?
That's how he makes his money.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's all I can say. I mean, he's original trilogy. Yeah. I still would not pay $70 for his.
No.
Autograph. So, you know,
Warwick Davis's autograph is 75.
Yeah, mine
and
was free.
All of his photograph or all of his autograph sessions are sold out.
Well, he's got little hands. It takes a long time to write his name. He's got a very nice signature.
Does he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Compared to some, where it's like just a scribble.
Oh, Paul Bettany's going to be there.
Hmm.
He's $80.
Yeah. See, I mean, obviously it's to keep the crowds down. You know, they're not going to have them for $20 and then have thousands of people in line. They want to limit it.
Right.
But I don't know how, you know, I still don't know how that works. You know, what kind of fee they're paid, what kind of agreement they have.
Right. Your buddy James Arnold Taylor is $40 for an autograph.
Yeah, I can see that.
Greg Grunberg is $50.
Yeah.
Freddie Prinze Jr. 65.
Yeah, he's overpriced. And they were doing two furs with him and Sarah Michelle Gellar because she's a voice. Well, I guess she was on Rebels the same way.
Right.
But yeah.
Who the hell is Annabelle Davis?
Don't know.
Because her autograph is $40, but she's only appearing one day?
Okay.
Sunday? She was Miscellaneous Crew on Star Wars Episode 7.
Oh, great. Let's give her own panel.
She was a creature and droid puppeteer. Hmm.
Okay, so in a 2016 article in the Hollywood Reporter, apparently Stephen Amell was so intrigued by the convention circuit that he started his own talent agency to help other actors navigate them.
Yes.
And it said that he walks away with $250,000 a weekend.
Yes, which is why he does so many.
Wow.
There were reports.
Well, I can see.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say there were reports of, I want to say it was the chick that played Kaylee on Firefly.
Okay.
She was asked about working as an actress in Hollywood, and she said that she would rather go to conventions because, quite honestly, she was making more in a weekend signing autographs than she would have on the parts that she'd be working for like 2 months on.
Yeah, they say that, you know, if you're doing a guest star turn on a TV show, you can get about 10 grand.
Yeah.
And you can make double, triple, more than that.
Yeah, if Amel's making $250,000 on a weekend, like, why would you ever stop doing that?
Yeah.
Like, that just makes no sense to me.
Integrity?
I guess. I mean, but at the same time, like, he's the whole reason why he claims that he's stepping away from Arrow is because he wants to spend more time with his kid. But do you think that's going to impact his
on the convention circuit?
His convention circuit time? No. No, he just doesn't have to get up
weekends.
Fucking 5 days a week to and train and shit. Like,
right.
I mean, I completely understand like getting a role like that where you can just do the convention circuit for the rest of your life and everything would be fine. Mm. But, you know, when you have to go to the convention circuit as Sand Trooper in A New Hope.
Right.
Come on, show us details. I wanted that to flow so much better. And your autograph as Sand Trooper in A New Hope is $50?
Yes.
And that's really all he's known for?
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know. Oh, he was also in The Spy Who Loved Me. So he did James Bond, I guess.
Oh, whatever.
So, yeah. I mean, I totally get why they do that.
Yeah.
And especially now when you can charge that much money.
So basically it is all about the money.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with being an actor because you're fulfilling some dream or it's your life's calling or God asked you to do it. It's just because you fucking want to make the money.
I would assume that there comes a point in an actor's life where they've waited tables for so long and they finally get a taste of success and somebody says, hey, have you ever thought about doing one of these conventions? And saying, no, I haven't. Tell me about it. And then you get somebody like Stephen Amell who's like, look, you're on this show and you're very recognizable now. You can make serious bank on the weekends. And they fly you out, they put you up in a hotel, they pay you a fee, and you make money off of autographs.
Yep.
Well, what the fuck? Why wouldn't you jump on that? I'm sure the jadedness of Hollywood just like rips people apart to the point where they're like, well, fuck it. It is all about the money now.
Sure.
Because, I mean, is Stephen Amell ever going to win an Oscar?
Oh, hell no.
Probably not.
Is he going to work after this? Is he going to work maybe after season 8 of Flat? Of whatever Arrow? Show he's on? Arrow.
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe
more
I mean,
so than Grant Gustin will.
I mean, he's got the acting thing, he's got the convention thing, and he has his own winery that he promotes heavily. So I'm assuming as long as his kid is young enough to where he wants to be involved with her and like until she grows up, that's all he's gonna do. And, you know, maybe he gets some guest spot roles on some of the superhero things. You know, maybe
Legends of Tomorrow.
Maybe who knows? Maybe Marvel jumps on him and says, hey, look, you want to be a Marvel superhero now? And, you know, you only have to work once every couple of years in a movie or whatever. Who knows? I mean, he tried that. He took a foray out into movies with the second Ninja Turtles film where he was Casey Jones. It wasn't a good role. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a good film. So like he didn't really get any acknowledgement out of it, but what if he straps his wagon to the right one?
Yeah.
You know, who knows?
Or he could become Kevin Sorbo.
Or he could become Kevin Smith, where in a couple of years he's like, what if we do Arrow the reboot? Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yes. Yes.
We'll get everybody back. Be like, nobody ever left. Just Oliver in his later years. What do you say?
Well, you know, speaking of that,
yeah.
So I'm almost caught up on Arrow. I've got one more episode to go, but I did see the Star City 2040.
Uh-huh.
I would watch that as a series.
There's a lot of people that are thinking that that is the backdoor pilot to a show about Arrow or the Arrow universe in that time period.
Yeah. Except
yeah.
Felicity is still alive.
Yeah.
So if she's not coming back, is she totally cutting ties, or she just doesn't want to do the last season of the series?
Or are they about to announce that Star City 2040 or whatever it's called will be a brand new show for next season starring Emily Betts Rickard?
Oh, well, that could be. But why wouldn't they keep her for the last season?
Maybe there's the time commitment. There's just no way to have her there at the same time.
I guess.
Because the chick that's playing her daughter is apparently a very well-known, like, leading actress in Canada.
Okay.
Now I'm trying to find Star City 2040. Let's see. Mia Smoke. Catherine McNamara? It was nice to see Katrina Laubach, though, for all of 5 minutes as Nyssa.
Yeah.
So she was in all the Maze Runner movies?
Okay.
Which I guess is her big thing. She's done a bunch of, I guess voiceover work for TV shows and stuff, but everybody keeps saying she's not the kind of person that you would just bring in for, like a guest starring role for like a handful of episodes in a season, that it would be more, you know, like a backdoor pilot, which is why maybe they brought Roy back. Maybe that's, you know, maybe Colton Haynes, they're like, look, we're going to do this thing where you're in a couple episodes, but like, you're going to be a starring member in this new show.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? I mean, I'm just speaking out of my ass because I've got no proof of this, But I mean, that episode also shed some light on like Oliver dying. Like he's in the very, very beginning and then he's not seen again for the entirety of the episode.
Right.
So I would have to think that maybe, you know, at some point, well, next season he dies off and then they're like, all right, here you go. Here's a new show for you. Because then that kind of like keeps the crew intact as far as like the writers and the actual shooting crew.
Yeah.
And then they just go on from there. I don't know. All conjecture. All smoke out of my ass. Who knows? I'm wondering whether or not the CW can handle another superhero show, but you know.
Well, we'll see.
Unless Star City 2040 is on The Seed, is that their streaming thing?
Oh, I don't know. Is it
the CW The Seed or whatever it is? That's where they did all those animated shorts for. Oh, the chick that was on Legends of Tomorrow with the animal powers.
Vixen. Oh, okay.
Vixen.
Yes.
So, who knows?
Don't know.
All right, you got anything else for this week?
Nope.
All right, well, if you want to get in touch with us, you can always send us an email at info@dancemonkeypodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. Let us know you're listening. So until next week, this is Chris.
This is John.
Have a good week.